Davey D hanging out with you this afternoon, and sitting in front of me is a legend and behind-the-scenes power player. A lot of times you may see her as listed as one of the most influential people in the music industry. Her legacy precedes her. People like Cash Money, Master P, you name it. There's a whole lot of artists that owe some of their success or a great deal of their success to the behind-the-scenes work she has done. She is the founder of the Rap Coalition. We're talking about the one and only Wendy Day. How you doing?
I'm awesome. How are you?
Good. It's a pleasure to have you here in the flesh. We've had you on the phone a few times, but let's kind of kick things off and remind people what the Rap Coalition is about.
Absolutely. I started Rap Coalition in 1992. It's really the closest thing we have to a union in rap music. Basically, when an artist is in an unfair, oppressive contract, whether it's with a management company or a production company or a record label, we step in and we break their deal, and we do it for free, and we've always done it for free. It's a not-for-profit organization, a 501c3 actually, and it's the coolest job I've ever had in my life, and I love it, and I can't stop.
What's the usual type of deal that you get called in and you're asked to break?
Production deals. I get called in for a lot of production deals. A production deal is where there's a middleman between a record label and an artist. And very often when there's a middleman, the money doesn't trickle down all the way. So you know that that becomes a problem for an artist who's on the road working and putting in 20-hour days, 7 days a week, and then the money doesn't come. It's kind of upsetting.
So for people who aren't familiar, let's say, you know, and I'm just going to pull some names out to make the point. Let's say you get a guy like DJ Clue, you know, who's a producer, and he gets a deal with, say, Def Jam Records. And then he has an artist that he has a particular deal with, you know, let's say it's MCX and MCY. And so he's the one that gets the checks. He's the one that is the face that the label sees. And then, you know, whatever deal he has with MCX and MCY, it's his business. And so those artists have very little to do with anything with the label, but they may be the thing that everybody knows that, you know, DJ Clue for example.
Exactly, and I certainly don't mean to single Clue out, nor am I saying that he doesn't pay his artists, but in this example that you've given me, that's exactly it. He's the middleman between a Def Jam and, what was the example, MCX, was it?
MCX and MCY.
There we go, MCX and MCY. So he's the middleman, so the checks are cut to DJ Clue Incorporated, and then it's up to DJ Clue to write checks to MCX and MCY, and sometimes that trickle down doesn't happen. And again, not necessarily in the case of DJ Clue, but in the case of many production companies, the money gets spent long before the money's ever seen by the end user, which is the artist.
We're talking with Wendy Day of the Rap Coalition. You know, you have always been very forthright and, you know, have freely shared information with people about the draconian business that we're in, the music industry, and the type of lopsided contracts that people sign. Two questions. First, talk about some of these contracts that are signed and some of these contracts that you've broken, and why is it in 2006 people still will sign to these lopsided deals? How is the industry able to maintain this type of predatory practice?
God, what great questions. I ask myself this every day. I'm going to answer the second one first because it's really my hot spot. I think what happens is, Davey, is that artists are so hungry to get on and they want the fame so badly that they think that, oh, it can't happen to me, or I'll sign to this person even though this company has jerked the 8 artists that came before me. It won't happen to me because I'm better or I'm more talented, or I don't care if it happens. I want it to happen because at least I'll have a career then. You know, a lot of artists don't realize what it means to be stuck in a bad situation. They don't understand that it's the end of their career. They just think, oh, so what? I'll make less money. Well, it's not that you make less money, it's that you have no career and no money. And that's a huge problem. The contracts that I've broken, most of them are because one person is interested in making the lion's share of the money, meaning a record company says, you know what, I'm taking the risk, I'm putting up the money, so therefore this artist, who, let's face it, the artist has the power in this situation if they'd only flex it, they make the music. the company can't exist without the artist, but the artist can exist without the company. So that tells you right there who has the power in the equation.
But the labels over the years have become very apt at trying to pimp the artist and make it seem like they're doing them a favor.
Yes, yes, it's pure trickery. Because they come in with the attitude like, if it weren't for us, there would be no you. We built you. And they get the artist to believe it. It's the same as the 500 years of oppression. You sort of beat somebody down long enough, and they start to believe that maybe it's true.
Are you surprised that, and then I'll get some of the specifics of how these contracts looked and what the percentages are, but are you surprised that you'll have artists that do material where they talk about their pimping and how much they run the block and they got the block on lock and, you know, and they have all these street braggadocio type of rhymes, which, you know, you're going, okay, they're handling their business. But then sometimes they're the ones that are getting pimped the worst, you know, in the back room. And, I mean, how does that happen? How does somebody who got the block on lock show up at a record company where they get a 90%?
It's a different game, Dave. You know, you can be the man on the block. You can be a crack shot. You can be the biggest pimp with the best game and the best bottom girls. And the bottom line is when you come into the music business, it's a totally different business. You know, you're dealing with very well-educated and very well-connected older white men. So this business is run by gangsters with law degrees, not gangsters on the street. And that's a whole different playing field.
And the key word is that they are gangsters. I was reading Jerry Heller's book, Ruthless. And, you know, it's interesting when you're looking at that book because he talks about the NWA days and he gives the whole rundown about it and his perspective. But he also talked about his life story. And I'm sitting there and he's like, you know, when I grew up and I came into business and me and David Geffen and Clive Davis, we went for beers. And I'm looking, I'm saying, damn, all these people that now run these labels all came up together. And they all kind of had gangster shady past, you know, numbers running, you know. Talk a little bit about that.
They got nothing on the Crips and the Bloods and BMF, huh? Yeah, it's just crazy. It's you know, these are very highly educated people that all are very well connected. They came up together, so they depend on each other for certain stuff. You know, I was reading in the early days, and I don't know how true this is, Davey. It's just, you know, it was in a book that I read where when Shug wanted to break Dre's contract.
Shug Knight, for yes. People who don't know.
Thank you. With NWA, that he had the Sony lawyers helping him. And I was kind of floored when I read that because I always wondered how he was able to do that as a guy off the streets. You know, of course, I assumed that he handled it in street tactics. It never crossed my mind that he would be able to go to a major corporation and have them step in and help. And of course, the major corporation would help because there's money in it for them. You know, if he went and did a deal with Sony, there's an incentive for Sony to be helpful. And again, I don't know how true that is. It was strictly in a book that I read. I wasn't there, so I don't really know. But it was just amazing to me to think that that's the way this game is played. But, you know, that's exactly how this game is played. It's very shady.
We've been talking with Wendy Day. Before we go to break, give us an idea of these percentages and these contracts and how they look and have they improved over the years.
They have improved a little. And let me give you just a generalization of a relatively decent recording contract for a new artist. It's going to basically be somewhere between a 12 and 15% deal, which means the artist is going to get 12% to 15% of the retail selling price after they pay back all the expenses that are spent on their record. And that's called recouping, where you pay back half of your video, all of your independent promotion, all of your recording budget, all of your advance. There's certain costs that the label feels they shouldn't have to absorb. So basically, it's a loan. They're fronting you maybe $300,000 to make your record, but before your record even comes out, you owe them $300,000. And that money is paid back out of your little 12% to 15% share.
Whoa, 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 whoa. Okay, let's make sure I follow this. Okay, just so we understand, okay? I'm an artist, and I come along, and, you know, let's say Sony Music gives me $200,000 to record my record contract, right? And I have a deal where I get 12%, while they get 88%?
Yes. And out of that 12%, you're paying back that $200,000. It's not like that $200,000 comes off the top, and then you split the money.
Wait, it doesn't come off the top? So, whoa. So, wait, this is... Yeah, so let me just get this. I'm an artist and I sell a million records, right? So there's lots of money that came in. You know, a million records at $10 a pop, let's just round the numbers, $10 million, right? I was loaned $200,000, right? So they don't go, hey, we just made $10 million off of this $200,000 investment. They don't go, hey, let's just take this $200,000, Dave. No, they don't do that.
No, they don't do that. And that's one of my biggest gripes in this industry. Now, don't forget, it's more than just $200,000 because you've got radio promotion, you've got retail promotion. There's so many other areas. Your video, you've probably got, if you've sold that many records, you've probably had two or three videos. And in your contract, you're paying back 50% of every video, and it's 50% up to a certain cost. So let's say that it's 50% of $75,000, but you go over budget and you spend $100,000 on your video.
Some of these companies won't take a video unless it costs a certain amount, right?
Sure, sure.
So they look at you, like, so if I come in and go, I did a $50 video, they're going, no.
No way, because it's got to compete on BET and MTV with everything that's out there, the Jay-Z's and the 50 Cent. So it has to come in at a certain level anyway. But the point is, if you're going over budget, which is totally not your fault, because you didn't pick the director, you didn't pick the location, you didn't pick the producer.
The record company does.
Exactly. So basically, you're in debt. It's a debt game, and they keep you in debt because they want you to be poor, because they know if you're poor, they can control you with money. And here's what I mean by that, Davey. Let's say you've sold a million records, and now it's time for you to cut another record. You're probably pretty poor. You probably don't have a lot of money. So they're going to come to you and say, okay, you know what? You sold a million records. Now we're going to advance you. We did a $200,000 budget last time. Why don't we give you $500,000 this time? And when you're hungry, $500,000 seems like a lot of money. But what you don't realize is that's a loan. It's an advance. And not only do you have to pay back your first album, but now you've got to pay back that the second album, which is the $500,000 plus.
So you know artists that have sold a million with a $200,000 loan that still owe the record companies money?
Yes. I can't be that exact with you because a $200,000 budget is actually kind of low. It's actually a little bit larger than that. But yes, let's look at somebody like Slick Rick, who has gone platinum, you know, when he's put out records. And I just pulled him off of Def Jam this past March. He's no longer signed to Def Jam. He had been there since 1986. When I broke his contract, he had not made a dime from his record deal since 1986. And this is 2006. So 20 years.
Even after he's gone through and they made records when he was in jail, and they made records when he was caught up in this whole immigration incarceration thing, he never made no money?
Never made any money. He made show money. And he's made money from Lottie Dottie and the show because he owned the publishing on those songs. But from Def Jam, no. He was always in the negative. Always, 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 always.
Wow. We're going to take a break, and we're going to come back, continue our conversation. One of the most influential people in the music business, Wendy Day. She's the person that record labels hate to see because she breaks contracts. We'll be right back.